This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
Sure, we have 30 seconds to tell you that drivers who switch to Progressive could save big. But then what? Well, we could try to fill the remaining time with awkward pauses. It's often done for comedic effect. Is it working? I can't tell if this is funny. Maybe this is so bad it's funny. Wow, we really peaked at the save big when you switched to Progressive part. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Well, welcome to the Benzinga Cannabis Hour, take two.
Yes, this is take dose. We were talking about cannabis pasta, and you all weren't hearing anything.
Which is a shame, because as an Italian person, I would love some cannabis pasta.
Yeah.
I think that's missing from my diet.
Yeah, we're going to have to fix that, Tony, also known as Ray Liotta from Goodfellas.
My energy is that level today. I am off the walls. I'm full of energy, hyped up, ready for our guests. Who do we have on deck, Elliot Lane?
Niall Demena. I'm going to have to get him to pronounce that. Demena. Thank you. Niall Demena from Mana Molecular. Super, super cool company. As he's coming over, he's like a serial entrepreneur. He's had four some companies. He is the CEO and co-founder of Mana, and he's with us. I'm not going to tell him too much about him because it's always good to hear it from the horse's mouth. But I'm very excited. Niall, how are you, my friend?
Too handsome to be a horse. How are you, Niall?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks. I've been listening. I got to hear all the banter, so I feel bad for the guests that didn't get to hear the original take. But it's good to be here, and thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And honestly, they'll just have to listen to the podcast. Because I think they need to hear about cannabis pasta, and it's a real market.
And my love for alliteration.
Yes, I get called Excellent Elliot. But Niall, we don't want to waste any more time, man. Let's hear about you. Let's hear about Mana.
Sure. Well, Mana Molecular Science is a company I formed around 2015. We debuted with a transdermal patch that was very popular in a few states. We expanded it to 12 states. We've worked with companies like Cresco. We've worked with Parallel or Sotera down in Florida. We actually provide the patches for Papa and Barkley. So we're really excited. The way we do things is basically we take somebody who's the best at what they do. We hire them for a niche product category that we don't think that the normal dispensary owner would make for an in-house product, something that takes a high degree of sophistication and scientific endeavor. And then we turn that into a product. And we did that with patches. We're going to come out with a Gen 2 patch. Actually, we're going to start shipping the CBD version of that this week. Came up with a women's pleasure serum that enhances arousal and orgasm with a PI from Viagra that we're spinning off into a company called Bella Bioscience, which is really exciting. And we have real legit clinical data to suggest that this works in lots of populations, basically all women 18 to 75. So it's really exciting and, very patent protected and all of that stuff. So we feel really good about our ability to engineer and spin off assets. And right now, we're really excited to make more rec facing products in the sublingual tablet, what we're calling the Mana Subtab. It's 5 milligrams, hits you really quick. Less than 5 minutes and offsets about an hour and a half. And it comes in three flavors, Skittles, which, and these are all cannabis derived terpenes. So Skittles, wild orange and pure, which does have some terpenes in it, but just, it's much more mild.
Wait, so a Skittles flavor?
Skittles is in the cannabis flavor. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay. Got to make that clear to the lay people. Yeah.
Skittles with a Z. Let me be very clear. I don't want to get in trouble here.
Because all Skittles taste the same. So I thought that was Skittles flavor.
Yeah.
No, there's a good company out in Israel that derives these from natural sources. And they're great partners, and it allows us to over time, I think, add new flavors to the mix and, you know, basically use terpene profiles from actual strains of cannabis in our products.
So did you say one of the products was for women ages 18 to 75?
Yeah, so that's actually, so Manna invented this product. We patented it. We were the first to discover ever that basically CBD relaxes smooth muscle tissue of the vagina. And what we did is we made a nano encapsulated formula using multilamellar liposomes.
Elliot, can you hear him?
Yeah, I think we lost your audio there, Niall.
Yeah, we lost you right after labia loosening.
Yeah. Niall, can you hear us? Well, you know, I honestly, this conversation is pretty well timed. But because honestly, I've had a lot of conversations with companies recently about science, the science behind the product. Are you back, Niall?
No,
I'm back. I don't know what happened there, but
all right. Yeah, I'll let you get back to it.
Yeah, so we designed that for all women, you know, all cis women, 18 to 75. You know, you can go higher if you're still sexually active, but it relaxes smooth muscle tissue in the vagina. We proved that preclinically. We had 30 women enroll in what we use the female sexual function index survey, which is a clinically validated instrument. It's not clinically validated because we modified it, but all the questions are the same. And we got a 90% success rate on the orgasm outcome measures. And we had a 60% success rate on the arousal outcome measures. And we found that there were specific populations of women who are on drugs that limit your ability to have orgasms that had 100% success rate. So, and we developed this with the PI from Viagra and Cialis. So basically, he led some of the biggest products ever. We followed the same design pathway, so we feel really good in that. So that's going outside of Manna because it's a luxury beauty play right now. So take a look around, you know, Black Friday. Velo Biofence will produce its first product called Vela, and we're looking to get this into luxury big box retailers all over the U.S. within basically the week of Valentine's Day.
There you go.
With you know, your company is based in science, and actually, what I wanted to ask you anyway was, you know, I'm hearing a lot of companies are diving back into the science and the genetics and the operations right now, you know, to kind of prove out that this is a truly legitimate, you know, bioceutical wellness industry. Did you see a need for that when you created Manna?
I did. But it was, you know, this company has evolved in a sense because, you know, everything was medical early on and we were, you know, we could participate in that world. But I like the way that it's going in the more recreational direction. And I think science is still very important there. You know, we want to be less academic and more like Rick and Morty kind of science, you know, where you can have fun with it, you know, where it's in service of the experience that you have with the product. And so, you know, with the SubTab, we thought, hey, you know, nobody wants to be high for several hours, or maybe they do, but there's options for that. You know, I want something where I could go get high, walking the dog, and by the time I get back, I feel normal again. Or I can go for a workout and you know, power through my workout. And that's, the, you know, I could go see a movie or watch a TV show that I really like, and boom, the experience is bookended. Mm-hmm. And it happens really fast. So we really like that form factor. And yeah, I think science is important insofar as, you know, developing consumer trust around what you're doing. You know, I think obviously the proof is in the product, but the only way you get those products is you really invest in your, you know, knowing what you're doing, doing it differently. And basically, it's one of the ways to build assets. Mm-hmm. You know, if you ever want to be acquired or you want to sell, spin things off in your company, it's really important to have IP, know-how, trade secrets, and know how to use, you know, complicated equipment. For instance, you know, for nano emulsions, people are using these ultrasonicators. You know, those are okay, but most of the commercial food, beverage, and pharmaceuticals use high shear homogenizers and other things, which allow a greater degree of freedom, more choice in surfactants and other things. So we try to take a you know, that approach where we develop from first principles with people that really are experts at what they do. And we think we have a, you know, better replicable product that we can distribute in multiple states through multiple channels under our name, and it'll be the same quality everywhere we go.
What's your team like? How big is your team? I imagine a bunch of folks in lab coats and swigging beakers around. Like, what does it look like in the Mana world?
It's a close-knit group.
It's a close-knit group, we heard, and then he froze.
Visibly.
There we go.
Oh, there sorry. We go. Repeat that last part. It's a close-knit group.
It's a close-knit group. We have a lot of fun with what we do. We run very lean because what we do is we build a product, we kit it basically, and then we license it. So we can basically modularly scale to different with different partners in different states. And luckily, the partners that we have are very big partners, and they, whenever there's a new market, they're typically first to get there. Mm. So we get to expand with them. We get to make products that people want. And, we do have a lot of scientists, it's easy to invest because the bar of quality is very high. And this is not something other companies are doing. You know, you have your extraction artists and stuff, but that's not the same as a chemical engineer. That's right. Not the same as an organic chemist. That's not the same as a molecular biologist. So, and companies like that have employed these people, have typically done very well. If you look at Ebu, there's a few cannabis plays that have, really done well in terms of an exit and in terms of setting the bar of quality very high. I know Level Blends out in California has really good products. I know Kiva has really good products. So just like, anybody else, we take pride in what we do. And I remember hearing a story, I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but Kiva spent about a year designing the chocolate so that it had the sheen, so it looked the same under all the dispensary lighting. And again, I don't know if that's true, but that's the same obsessive quality that we have. And I like to see that in products because that makes them, the same experience over and over again. And you can do a lot of cool things that other people can't. And that's really what gives us the business advantage.
Can you talk more about the consumer brand experience? I mean, it seems like you all have a lot of products, so this may be a broad stroke question here, but what is it that you all look for there?
I mean, we want to provide things that aren't, either done well at the level broadly right now, or consumers don't know that they need. You know, like any good disruptive thing, when we were looking at sex and CBD, nobody took the science of that seriously. There are other products out there, and I think they're good. Women like them, but they're not even close to the same payoff that we have. So that's the thing, is I think, consumers are happy until something better comes along. And we always want to be that company that makes a product.
He always wants to be a company that makes a product better. I think that,
we lost your audio there again, Niall.
It's that kind of day, Elliot.
It is. It's gloomy here in North Carolina. And I mean, I don't know what it's like in New York, but
it's also gloomy.
Niall, can
but
you,
gloomy in New York is like nice everywhere else though.
Yeah. I honestly,
are we good?
Yeah, can hear you. Okay. Can you hear us?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the Bluetooth was cutting in and out. So, in terms of the experience of the consumer, we want them to have a lot of fun. We want to find any and all contexts in which we could insert ourselves in their lives to their benefit. And, we want to make products that are like kind of interesting, fit a certain need that's not being addressed right now, or hit a bar of quality that other products in the same category aren't really hitting. So I think, I think with this, in particular Subtabs, we're just envisioning, like people in the backyard, barbecuing, going for workouts, going on the boat. There's just a lot of context in which you can have an hour and a half window to get high off something instantaneously. And that the flavors and the terpenes connect it back to the plant that it originally came from. So we kind of don't want to be alienating science. We want to be like, make it fun and approachable in a way that benefits the consumer and gives them, some cool new product to show their friends and try out and be like, oh, I didn't know I wanted that until I had it.
Is that right? Balance the future of cannabis? Is that the secret? Are you giving the secret away today, Niall?
I mean, I think so. If you look at, cannabis 2.0 up in Canada, it's beverages, it's really new form factors. And I think those have sold really, really well. And I think Canopy is regearing in the CPG thing. So I think that these kinds of scalable products, if you put the investment in them, like you can make 100,000 tablets in a day and they can all be super high quality and all work the same and all look the same. And you can't build that unless it's built on a certain foundation of knowledge, on certain technical expertise, on certain equipment. And so, you know, that's what we do. We try to produce assets that do that on the business side, but also on the brand side, you know, we have a very visual, colorful brand, and I think it's very expressive. And again, we try to take the science and connect that back to the original plant material, which I think, you know, is kind of a cool way to look at it. Like I said, more Rick and Morty, less boring, dry academic stuff.
Absolutely.
I don't think anything you said today was dry at all.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Niall, you have an exciting brand, man. I think the fact that you're tying science and rec and medicinal and marketing, you know, you're really bringing it all home. And that's something that I think is missed sometimes. I'll leave it there, but I really appreciate, you know, the thought that's gone into Banna Molecular as a whole.
Yeah, and I'll just say this, you know, we've got other things coming down the line that we think are, you know, like Vela, we spun that off. It's now, it's raised money at $100 million valuation right out of the gate. So, wow. Like, this is a terrific field to be in. And if you have this kind of stuff, you can totally own a whole dimensional space in terms of the IP. So we have something, another transformational product that we'll be working on that I'm really excited about, that I'd love to come back on top and talk about it some other time. But, you know, look for the subtabs. Those will be out. Those will be great. I'd love to get you guys samples because, we'd love to feedback. But
no, you got to get his fiance and my missus a sample.
Honestly, we love sampling. We'll do it. We'll do it to the day we drop dead. The next thing that will come out after that is our BevPow. And I know a lot of people have these ready to mix beverages, but again, I think we're doing something different enough there that it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah. All right. As a side note here, if you want to hear more, Niall, I do. I know I do. He's going to be speaking October 15th at our cannabis conference.
I can't wait.
Really incredibly excited to continue to hear you dive more into it. I'm just going to entitle your presentation Rick and Morty.
Okay, great. That's perfect.
Awesome. Niall, do you want to leave us with one parting thought here, my friend?
Sure. Well, I would just say that, people, I think, wrongly assume that, you know, we've got our vapes, we've got our edibles, you know, we got our topicals, and that's all that cannabis can offer us. But I think we really just scratched the surface. And just like you're talking about cannabis pasta, I'm not sure that, you know, I'd give it a shot if I had it, but I'm not sure that kind of stuff has staying power. But I do know that there are lots of other form factors out there that give you different experiences. And I think that's what everybody wants now. You know, everybody's sitting at home bored. You know, you want to lighten things up. You want to lighten your mood up. You want to feel good. And, you want to kind of plug your ears sometimes with all the news that we're getting. And I think, you know, amen. Cannabis, it's going to continue to progress and work its way more seamlessly into our everyday lives. If you look like a company like Pantry that's making like infused flours and baking goods,
baking
that's really
goods.
Cool stuff. And I just think that people will be able to pick and choose their experience and what they get from their feelings, and not in the way that says, oh, we're just going to stick a feeling on this product and call it that. Mm. In a way that actually is meaningful. Replicable and kind of morphs into whatever the high you want from that particular experience. You know, I might want a different high if I'm watching the Celtics game and I'm getting all ramped up versus like before I go to bed. So I think that, you know, we're going to start to see more and more different form factors and ways of delivering this that, are super convenient, really fun to use, and allow us to kind of time manage our specific, and individualize our highs.
Interesting.
Niall, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
I was just going to give him one more time to tell folks where to reach you and read up on Manna.
Yeah, mannamolecular.com. Check it out. We have a science mode on the website, which we're going to be popular at, like adding more data to. So we think that's kind of cool. Check us out. And mannamolecularcbd.com is our CBD site. So you can order directly from the site there. And I hope all the ladies try Vela. And I hope everybody checks out the patches and the subtabs when those come out.
We will. Believe me, awesome. I am definitely interested. But Niall, we'll see you in a month, sir, if not talk sooner. Much appreciate you being here, my friend, and best of luck until then.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, everybody. Right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Right.
That's fun.
That was a fun segment.
Super interesting. I honestly, like, I talked to him about a month ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. It's not a month. And I was just in awe of everything that he's doing. And again, yeah, I listened to him again, probably say a lot of the similar things, and I'm still in awe about what he's doing. It seems simple, but it's far from it. And he's doing it in a digestible way.
Yeah, and that's the key here, because it's a very tech heavy show. So the fact that we can make it fun and easy to follow is you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah. So next up, Michael M. Aiello.
Yes.
No relation to the other Aiellos we know.
Danny Aiello? the late, great Danny Aiello?
Maybe no relation. I'm not quite sure. We'll let him tell us if he's related.
We'll find out.
Danny's older and better looking brother. a younger and better looking brother, we'll say. Yeah. Sorry, Michael. I didn't mean to, you know, call out anybody's age. But how are you, sir?
Good, good. So first of all, I'll definitely try that canvas pasta.
Of course you would. He's Italian. A centri. I think I spoke to you before, and centri, I don't know if I asked you if that has an Italian origin to it. Does it?
Yeah, no, it's centri, but you know, it's funny you asked that. I did come up with the name in Italy while I was in Rome. So
there you go.
It did come from there. you know, and then secondly, I'll say it's going to be hard to outdo Niall, but I'm going to give it out as well.
Yeah, where do you go after that?
we go back to finance is where we go.
Exciting.
Yeah, I know. Michael, tell us about you, man. How did you get into cannabis?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think about, you know, I'm a CPA, and, you know, obviously that starts off relatively boring with audit and taxes, but it also had a lot of compliance and regulation. And then after my times in audit and doing a lot of stuff with life science companies, and again, you're thinking compliance and regulation, then I went into the gold mining industry of all things and spent a lot of time again with compliance and regulation. So out from there, it just made natural sense to focus on an emerging sector like the cannabis sector, where there's compliance and regulation and accounting needs around that.
Were they similar that you found from going from gold to cannabis? I mean, it sounds like it wouldn't be in the same vein, but I'm sure there are crossovers.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. There's just, you know, when you think about regulation, some of the most regulated areas in the country is drugs, FDA approval, cannabis. Now then with cannabis as well, you have a lot of regulatory approval that occurs in mining as well, whether it's environmental, regulatory. There's also a phased approach about getting not necessarily a product approved, but going through commercialization to producing gold. So there is a lot of similarities when you look at life sciences, gold mining, and cannabis of all things. Or maybe at least that's what I've told myself in my head.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I feel like the mining industry does a good job of getting deregulation in place. Because if a lot of folks complain about just how mining occurs and where mining occurs and such, and the pollution aspect of it. What about cannabis? Do you see a future where regulations loosen up a little bit? And when?
Yeah. I have a bunch of thoughts on this. And, you know, the other thing I'll add is, you know, when I think about those previous lives I lived, they all went hand in hand with M&A, IPO, capital markets, and all those type of things as well. So it prepared me well for this world too. You know, as far as where do I think I see things going, whether it's M&A, IPOs, and I'll just move to what I think is coming next. You know, everyone has a lot of optimism for the fall, whether it's the election. Sure, that sounds great. And I hope that, you know, the election finishes and it's federally legal the next day. I highly doubt that. What I'm more optimistic for and I'm looking forward to see where the vote comes in New Jersey and Arizona. And probably most specifically in New Jersey. Because if the vote comes in for recreational there, then you're really quickly looking at Pennsylvania, New York, Connecticut, and of course, not to diminish what would be occurring in Arizona and some of the other cities and states out west. And what does that translate to? 80% of the population having access, almost 20 states being legal, 40 with medicinal, the government's going to have to do something at that point in time, with 80% of the population having access. So whether that's Safe Banking Act, whether that's a States Act, something's going to have to change. And I think that's the pendulum that pushes it the rest of the way.
Yeah, are you seeing, I'm hearing myself. But are you seeing trends up to the election that are noteworthy in M&A or as companies prepare for the capital markets, I guess we can say?
Yeah, you know, I think just overall in 2020 here, when we think about trends for M&A, you know, in half one 2020, M&A deals are significantly down from 2019, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, in 2018, but that's, you know, let's kind of push that off to the side here. You know, why are they down in 2020? So there's one easy answer, and there's this pandemic called COVID.
Heard about that.
You know, and that certainly put, I think a damper on some deals. I think there was already some wait and see type of mentality out there, but then you add a pandemic on top of it, it definitely is going to slow down some of the M&A activity. You know, so what have we seen starting to warm up now though? We're seeing a lot of people being inquisitive. We're seeing a lot of starts on due diligence. And why I talk about trends there, you know, I think due diligence in the past was, you know, a kick of the tire and then maybe a little more detail. It is significant more due diligence now. Yes, you have revenue. That's fantastic. What is your path to profitability? What is the next steps for your company? So that's definitely, you know, whether that's a trend or not, it's definitely something we're seeing that is much more prominent. You know, as far as on the, you know, what I think like the buy side of M&A, we're seeing a lot of the larger companies with, you know, great balance sheets, access to capital, looking out there for distressed situations. And on the flip side, we're seeing the smaller companies with weaker balance sheets identifying that they need to either pair with someone who has that access to capital or start selling off some of their assets. And we're really seeing a lot of that realization starting to happen now in the M&A sector. Also with the stock market, depending on the day, starting to balance a little bit, stock price is starting to at least stabilize somewhat, not in comparison to the past, but stabilize a little bit. That opens opportunities to do a lot of these stock acquisitions, these stock deals. And we think that's going to become very in vogue here in the later fall and certainly in 2021.
Do you mind if I follow up real quick? What's your thoughts on SPAC versus IPO? If you have them, I mean, have you had any experience in cannabis of potential SPAC, acquisition?
Mm-hmm. That was my next question. Yeah, we did a whole show focused on the SPAC acquisition trend.
Yeah, you know, SPACs are hot. That's for sure. I mean, you don't have to look too far to realize that the SPACs are hot right now. What we're seeing in, the cannabis sector is, you know, the SPACs want to see if there is a path to profitability. Is there income in the future? Because when they need to go back to their investors to say, this is where we should invest these funds. We raise this money in the capital markets. Now we want to deploy it. That there needs to be a return, an ROI, a return for the investors. And that has to come with some kind of profitability in the near term. So definitely hearing a lot of that activity, but it has to come with that profitability is what we're seeing and hearing.
Yeah. Would you agree with the notion that in the US it's mainly ancillary companies that are seeing that kind of interest?
I think it is, for the most part it is right now. You know, I think you're seeing maybe some CBDs, you're seeing mostly ancillary to the, you know, touching the plant. But again, I think as we look towards the fall, you're starting to hear a new tune, so to speak.
So, sorry, Tony, go ahead. I've been dominating.
No, it's okay. You've been dominating pretty well. That was just what I was wondering about the SPAC acquisition trend. But one thing that's been weighing on me, and it's a story that I've wanted to pursue, was just how well or how quickly deals can get done after being announced. And I'm looking to, as a case study, for example, a company like Schwazz. And I don't expect you, Michael, to, you know, if you're tight-lipped on any potential folks that you work with in particular, but without getting too specific, they had about three or four deals that were canceled. And I know that they're very M&A hungry. Do you think that there is is that indicative of a larger trend that perhaps people have an appetite for M&A, but maybe they're a little bit too quick to announce deals because some of those deals are getting canceled? Or does that tie into maybe the due diligence aspect that you were talking about, that maybe they discover something in the due diligence process that makes them want to rescind an offer?
Yeah, I think it does tie into a couple topics there. So again, you're looking at those companies with the strong balance sheets, access to capital. They're looking to do deals. They're looking for distressed situations where they can take advantage of it and capitalize on it. And then there's other companies looking to be scooped up, to be consolidated during this time. But if they can't get through the diligence, it's going to fall apart. So you really want to be careful of how quick you announce that deal, or it can look bad, so to speak.
How would a deal look bad? Like what would make somebody go, nah, never mind, we're not buying?
Yeah, I think depending on which piece you're touching. So you could get in there and you could see that there's an issue with certain licenses. Maybe, they're a startup, they're early, they're looking, but their license isn't there yet. And they don't believe that they're going to be able to get there. Maybe they have some kind of IP, and when they're starting to look at it, that's not going as well as they would have hoped as well. Maybe what their forecast and budgeting and they're projecting for profitability or revenue, they're really kind of discounting that factor. Mm-hmm. There could be other things as well where, this could be a stock deal and their stock just plummeted, and now that they're not able to do that deal as well without heavy dilution of their shareholders. So there's a lot of consideration there.
Mm. Are you still seeing valuation and overvaluing companies, companies putting out overvaluations?
I think that's really coming back down to earth. And I think when you look at where just the market is, where the stock prices are, it's really, especially in the US, it's come back down to earth a bit, which honestly, I'm glad to see. I think that's good for a maturing market. I think that's good for everything that everyone's hoping to see going forward in this industry and space.
So I have one final question. Tony may have more, but can you give us a prediction on when we're all going to be able to smoke a joint legally?
Legally, that's a good question. I can tell you, you can definitely do it. You can walk down 7th Ave in New York and you're not going to be given any trouble whatsoever, but I wouldn't necessarily call it legal. I think we got some time from that, but for now I'll take rec and I'll take medicinal, taking the next steps here in that fourth quarter and beyond.
Good man. Tony, you got anything else?
Just one more. What's your advice for a young entrepreneur who perhaps wants to get into this space, or perhaps, let me rephrase, maybe is in the space already and is looking to sell, and then they call you. What's your advice? That what happens on day one when you talk to that person? What are some of the questions that you ask? What do they need to know before getting on the phone with you?
Yeah, so look, I'd say the first thing is give me a call. And then right after that, we're going to talk about what your strategy is, what your management team looks like, what your goals are, what your cap table looks like, and what you're looking to get out of it. If we're looking for a liquidity event, is it M&A? Is it selling off an asset, the whole company? Is it an IPO? And at that point, then we're going to walk down. I'm going to want to understand what your strategy looks like, where we can provide ROI for the investors, what the use of proceeds looks like so we can increase capacity, sales and marketing, et cetera, to get best value for you, the entrepreneur, the initial investor, and then also all the investors you've brought in or will bring in the future.
Perfect.
Great.
Michael, thank you for your insights. Really exciting, man. And you will also be participating in October 15th, I believe, leading a conversation. Come hear Michael talk. He's probably going to be working with other industry leaders in a conversation on October 15th. And if you have any other thoughts, please, Michael, let us know. But it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the October conference. And everybody else, check us out at centuryconsulting.com.
Perfect. There you go. Century, Michael. Not Chentry.
we'll talk about cannabis pasta later. See you, Michael. Have a good one.
Alliteration, Elliot. Pot pasta.
Pot pasta.
Marijuana macaroni.
All right, you're going off the deep end.
I know, I'm sorry.
Bring it back, reel it in.
Bring it back. Let's get sexy again. Let's talk about technology and compliance.
Yes. Hey, all necessary in this industry. And
it's very necessary. I mean, I was joking, but the next topic is on RFID tagging, which is designed to improve compliance. And if you're not compliant, your cannabis business is in dire straits.
Well, as we get them over here, do you have any thoughts on that? On the he didn't give me an answer about when we're gonna, you know, have legalized.
Yeah,
pot, but
I think we're getting there. I mean, it's I liked, you know, we talked about New Jersey a little bit. People are keeping an eye on certain markets, so they're gonna zero in on certain states, which makes me happy because that's our next door neighbor, right? When you come back to New York,
yeah,
you're a Manhattanite just like me, so we'll head over to Jersey and have some fun.
Although, you know what's even more fun is talking to a couple guys from Michigan. I'm just saying, that's our home base, our headquarters, right there in the heart of Detroit. Scott, Mike, how are you gentlemen doing?
Good, good. How are you guys doing? Pleasure to be on today.
You guys look like you're cruising down the highway right now.
Where are you?
No, yeah. We've been on the road visiting some grows, and just the way that it happened, you know, we wanted to get on the show, very excited to be a part of it. And it just happened. We were going to use a conference room, but the grow team needed it. And we thought this was probably the most quiet.
You've got a business to run. We get it. You got to do what you got to do. And honestly, coolest setting we probably had on the show. Yeah. Just saying. But it's good to have you guys. How is Michigan holding down?
Well, Michigan is finally starting to get its legs under it. So for the longest time, I mean, everything was deficient. Like, there was not enough supply anywhere. Everyone was sold out immediately. And now we actually have stock, and, you know, dispensaries have stuff that they can sell. So that's good.
Market
finally maturing and becoming less of just this infant thing getting off the ground to actually, you know, businesses operating successfully.
Yeah. And we'll touch on the MRA in a bit, but let's hear more about Stash Stock. You know, you guys have been around for a bit now, right? 5-6 years?
5 years, 2015, we started. We knew we wanted to get in this industry. We have tech backgrounds, and we knew that we could help with technology. And then really, when we found out that the states that use Metric as a regulatory system, they use RFID tags. And so instead of managing your inventory by plants and moving around and barcode scanning all of them, you can wave this tool around and you can move hundreds of plants at once. You can audit rooms in like the minute, you know, in a couple minutes compared to, imagine if you were in a room of 500 plants and you had a barcode each single one of those
fight
in the mesh and on your hands and knees just to get to the barcode. So with this device, I can audit. The device says Metric expects there to be, you know, 450 plants in this room. Is there really 400 plants in that room? You know, so you wave this tool around and it tells you that. You can audit your packages as well. So move your plants. It does a lot of that plant management, and it does it faster and cleaner than any other solution.
So what does it look like? Is it like a magic wand?
kind of. It actually looks like a gun almost. It has a trigger. It has a face where the RFID kind of is directionally out of. So you're walking around with this RFID scanner gun, and there's a phone that's kind of mounted with it that's running the application that's bringing all the smarts to say these tags mean this in Metric, and based on the room that you're in, it's either right or it's wrong, or it'll offer you, hey, these are new to the room, do you want to move them, do you want to update their flowering phase, do you want to destroy a plant because it's moldy or has some sort of problem, it's stunted, you just want to get rid of it. And that brings your capabilities to the grow team to, while they're doing actions, oh, this plant is unhealthy. Okay, well, a lot of times people will write in a logbook like tag 345, unhealthy, I threw it away, whatever. But this way they can actually immediately register that with the state. Like, I'm getting rid of this plant, I'm gonna scan its tag, it's gonna be recorded to the state that it's destroyed. And now there's no more work to do. So to streamline the whole thing, bring it straight to the worker who's doing that work anyway, and allow them to feel confident that they can do that successfully.
So we won't make you demonstrate because you're in a car right now, but eventually I'm going to need the appropriate technique for how to wave it around. Is like Expelliarmus. So what is it? Does it have to be in a certain size room? Like, is it what's the best environment for this?
So we have an RFID best practices that we kind of talk about, but there's different levels of getting involved with RFID. Like when we're talking about this RFID hand scanner, this is like this will work everywhere. Any grower who has any number of plants can utilize a hand scanner and benefit from it. Now the scanner itself is only going to be 10 to 15 feet, but we can do rooms of 500 plants, audit them in about 7 minutes.
Wow.
Versus like barcode scanning them all, going back to the computer, exporting what's supposed to be there. What did we see? Like it's an enabling thing because a lot of people I think can't realistically do right routine audits because the time investment is too high, but this allows it to be minutes, right? There is no excuse for you not to be auditing at least weekly because it only takes a few minutes.
Yeah. Right.
And we have the whole, you know, soup to nuts, the you know, seed to sale platform. But the two tools that really separate us, we feel, is this RFID scanner and also our harvest scale. So harvesting is a big part, right? That's kind of the finish line of where the plant makes it to. And again, instead of weighing every plant, which is required by law, and then taking a, you know, manual log of that, we do that through an application that we developed. And then when you're done, you can submit all your results to the state. If for some reason, you want to submit those results to yourself just to look at the data before submitting, you can do that as well. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, ways to package and sell, and we have that as well. But I think the tools that we have that are considered sexy and really useful and time savings would be the scanner and the scale that we have.
That's so scanners cool. And scales.
Scanners
and scales. The alliteration. We're just talking about it. So am I right? Did I read this right? That operations already pay for this technology? Is that correct?
So when you get licensed through Michigan, the license fee is pretty high. And part of that license is, you know, goes to metric and keeping that alive. And so you're, you know, in the states that use metric, Ohio is the only metric state. So metric is the biggest regulatory system out there. Mm-hmm. And they're in 14 states right now. Other than Ohio, all of the rest of the metric states have RFID in them. So when you get licensed through the state, part of that for the state to be able to monitor what you're doing is through these metric tags. And so part of your license really has that cost rolled into it. And for you, the tags are yellow tags or blue, depending if it's rec or medical. They've got this inlay and they got a barcode. So you can barcode away, but really if you're paying for this technology, you might as well utilize it. So not only does it keep you compliant, but you know where your inventory is at all times, and it's just easier to manage and be a part of that.
And to clarify
what is the cost? Sorry, go ahead.
The fee used to include your tags. Like Michigan's licensing fee is higher than any other state by a long shot. And it used to include your tags, and they quickly ended that. So people are paying for their own tags plus this super high licensing fee. And the tags are like, depending if it's a plant or a package tag, they're 25 to 45 cents a pop, and they're not reusable. And there are certain instances where you just have to throw away tags just to make the system happy. Like, yeah, I tagged this thing, throw it away, and now I'm doing something else with it. Mm. So you're like just burning through this RFID money, but Metric itself doesn't give you any tools. There's no RFID solution that they're going to give you to work with their system. So you have to use a vendor like us that says, okay, we'll make that happen for you.
Well, as a vendor like you, we have a question from the chat. How do you cost it? Is this a leasing agreement or just a product sold directly to growers? I think they're interested in hearing more about how you all work with the operations themselves.
So for us, it is a subscription because it's not like we can just hand you a platform and then it's hands off. We never have to deal with it again. Metric's always making changes. We have to keep up with those changes. So we do it based on your plant count. And you might pay somewhere like 10 cents a plant, maybe higher, maybe lower, depending on how big you are, but it works out. It should work out that you're paying less for the solution than you would be for the equivalent labor to cover that same compliance concern. So ideally you should be coming out ahead and using technology instead of people, especially to do repetitive data entry kind of comparison type stuff. It just makes a lot more sense.
You touched on this earlier. Sorry, Tony, did you have a question? I've asked like five in a row.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm just curious. It seems like such an active space. What's the employment opportunity with a company like yours? Like, is Stash Stock hiring? And what kind of folks would you look to hire?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is going to be true in general for the industry, right? There's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of room for growth, a lot of room for improvement, a lot of room for innovation. For us, I mean, we deal with technology, so we're talking about developers, you know, customer management. There's a lot of hand-holding at first, especially a lot of cultivators either, one, have never grown before and they don't know anything what they're doing. And we kind of have to help them with that. Or right. Two, they're growers and they know how to grow, but this whole compliance thing, right? Like, oh, I have to track all this stuff and get it into the state and I only have 48 hours to manage all this stuff. And even the training, right? When you get a training from the state on how you're supposed to manage your license, it doesn't actually cover most of the things that you need to do.
We field a lot of that. So part of the service is walking you through, you know, how do you actually transfer your plants into metrics so we can pick them up through our, you know, API and integration with them. So,
there's an integral part of a business, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like half of it. That's incredible. So jumping into Michigan, you know, you touched on this just a little bit before, but, you know, let's talk about the MRA. You know, some people are happy, some people aren't. You know, we don't have to get into that as much, but, you know, unless you'd like to.
I don't know. It's
best. Cut loose.
But how far have we come? You know, where are we right now?
I think that since Governor Whitmer took over that piece of it, before there was a panel with, I don't know, five or six people on the panel, and you know, it seemed like it took, you know, iterations and weeks to get these grows online, and it seems like they kind of redid the MRA a couple years ago, and since then it seems like they've kind of opened up the floodgates, but there's a lot more applications have gone through. There's a lot more grows that have popped up, a lot more dispensaries, processors. And so really Michigan is starting to hit its stride a little bit. And you can see that with not only the number of grows, but you know, when we started, we had customers that were like, you know, one or two license. Same customers now have grown with us, or we've grown with them, where they're like 9-10 licenses. Now they're getting into some of the outdoor sun-kissed product. So it's interesting to see that progression. Mike and I were in Missouri right before COVID really hit, and that was the last expo, if you guys remember what an expo was.
They actually no, go, I don't.
Yeah, crazy. I have nightmares. I'm having nightmares.
But they were going through a lot of those same pain points that Michigan were, where, you know, just a lot of red tape and a lot of, you know, well, we put our application and one got accepted, one got rejected. Now we're figuring that out. So it seems like Michigan has kind of crawled through the mud and is standing up and is starting to kind of, you know, get its pace going, if you will. So we're really happy with what it is now compared to what it was. Could it be better? Of course. But I mean, if you look at the comparison, it's definitely better.
Now that's on the licensing side though, like them getting through applications and getting people licensed and able to grow and sell and process. But a lot of the substance of what needs to be tracked and how do we do it? And, you know, we'll go on site and explain to someone, this is how you're going to manage your grow. And then they'll be like, oh, but my compliance officer from the state told me I have to do X, which is completely wrong. But we can't argue with that. So then we'll have like two or three customers doing some weird thing some different way. And when we try and address it, it's like, well, my guy told me it's this way. And that, I think, is in multiple states, even California, and that drives us crazy. Like the inconsistency of enforcement, of when you ask your, you know, your inspector, how should this be? And you get different answers depending on your region. It's just, it's maddening for us because yeah. we're trying to build tools that satisfy all these different requirements. And this guy will swear up and down, it's got to be done this way. And then this guy's like, no, I got in trouble for doing that. Yeah.
Which state is the worst? Let's, what is it, California?
Yeah, I mean, come on. You're putting this on the spot here.
Yeah, let's dig in.
California.
Let's stir it up.
I will say this. Mike and I had an opportunity to go to California, which we went. And we thought, hey, California has been doing this for longer than we have in Michigan. And we thought that it was going to be very, like, compliance, very tight, very, you know, everything by the book. And it was very loose in California. Very loose. And I think they're still, and it's funny because, you know, they'll talk about it as, you know, we call it the black market. They really market it and call it the traditional market. And that's what they call it out there. And the traditional market seems to be very much alive over there, where as it's progressed, states like Massachusetts and Maine and Michigan, Ohio have kind of taken what they're doing, but it's a little bit like they put the fear of God in you. Like, hey, if you don't follow these rules, you will be ticketed. And after X amount of tickets, we will pull your license. So, I mean, the grow that we're at right now, I mean, this is probably like a $3 or $4 million facility, you know? And so you've put all this money into the facility. You've got, you know, all your labor that you pay and, you know, all your nutrients and your lights and your irrigation system and all that. And so you're not going to really mess around to mess around with compliance. You know, what's a couple thousand bucks a month when, you know, the potential is way, way more, you know? So it seems like the newer states are a little bit more compliant than some of like the older states, if you will.
Okay.
Yeah,
hopefully well.
That also speaks to the size of the markets. Like in Michigan, you know, really big grows are going to be 15 to 20,000 plants in a single facility. But in California, we saw 75,000, 100,000, 200,000. Like the system is not made to track that.
Yeah.
Like for Michigan, it works fine. Out there, it's not feasible to do some things that you need to do.
Well, what needs to happen to get there to track all that and the volume?
I think it's more of people need to reevaluate the way the system is built and the requirements for tracking. Some things just don't make sense. Mm. And they just need to be removed or altered in some way to make it more feasible to actually capture that data. And a lot of things are captured that are never then reflected upon. So as we're collecting data for some supposed reason, but there is no reason. Right? So, yeah, and then that, you know, then the license holder, like, well, why am I even doing this? And it's a whole thing.
So what is next for StashStock? You know, we've talked about MRA, your technology. Where are you guys headed next?
That's an interesting
question. In the short term, obviously we want to be a successful compliance vendor for cannabis, right? But ideally, we would like to get to the point, like there's only a handful of state level compliance systems. We can do all the same things that Metric does. We can do all the same things as BioTrack or MJ Freeway. When we started, we had an opportunity to bid on Michigan's compliance tracking. And we thought for sure that Metric had to be so good because it's in so many places that we didn't even bother applying. Then when we integrated with them and we see the product itself, and we're like, oh my God, we could have absolutely done a way better job than that.
Oh man.
And it's like, oh no. So we're looking forward as new states are coming online and new external to the US governments as well, implementing track and trace in a more sensible way is really our more long-term goal.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Fantastic. All right.
Well, before we sign off, I got to ask, what's in the box behind you? You got an Amazon box.
Is this something fun? Yeah, we were setting
scanners
up
some stuff.
Scanners and scales.
And
scales
not a wand, but a gun.
Truck full of them.
Yeah, truck full of them.
I was going to say, do you want to show off your product real quick before we have to say goodbye?
Yeah, do you have any props?
I don't think we have.
I'll go over the time to see some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but they can also find you at your website, which is...
There you go.
www.stashstock.com.
Perfect. That's beautiful. Make sure to hit these guys up. Their knowledge seems to be impeccably well-timed right now in the industry. But Tony, if you don't have anything else, I'm gonna start calling you Nosy Noto for looking at the box behind them over there.
Hey, I'm sure our viewers on YouTube are thinking the same thing.
All right. Well, Mike, Scott, anything else you want to leave us with today to finish off a gloomy Thursday where we are, but sunny where you are? Only a bit jealous.
No, we just appreciate you guys having us on. We'd love to, touch base in 6 months or so, and we'll have our gun ready. We'll have a little bit more of we'll have a nicer background. I can't remember the gentleman's name before, but he had a whole city, landscape in the back, and we'll have our tools and we'll make it look a little bit more.
Oh, no worries there. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Very educational and very insightful, and we look forward to doing it again soon. But you guys stay well.
All right, you too. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Stash Doc. Elliot, what a show.
That was fun.
A little stumble, a little fumble at first, but we recovered, right? That's what life's about.
They missed, we keep referencing cannabis pasta, and I keep referencing cannabis pasta. I won't pull you into that.
But are you hungry, Elliot? Go have some dinner.
Apparently, but that was fun. We had a very informative conversation with Michael. I think what was a fun conversation with Niall, and honestly, a necessary conversation with Stash Stock, guys. So yeah. I think all the way around, if you're looking at this as an entrepreneur, all three conversations are necessary to have. But Tony, it's been a pleasure, as always.
It is. I mean, we haven't done this in a while, but I'm hoping that there are more in the future. So Elliot, until next time.
We're going to kick Patrick and Javier off. They're done.
I think, our energy is, it's a different show, man. Like we bring a different energy to it.
It is. Well, everybody stay safe. Thank you to the pre-market prep crowd that stayed around. Listened to the show. Hope you guys do it again next week. Tony, thank you. Aaron, thank you. And everybody else. I don't think there is anybody else, but if anybody I missed, have a great Thursday, y'all. Yes. We'll talk to you later.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results, real care, real about recovery.